Church of the Brethren webcast series. I am Antonello, executive producer of these webcasts, and your host for this program. Welcome, everyone, to this first in a series of 10 podcasts about The Chronicler. I'm Antonello, your host for the series, and with me today is Dr. Stephen Schweitzer. Steve is the academic dean at Bethany Theological Seminary and has been part of the faculty since the fall of 2009. Prior to that, Steve served as assistant professor of Old Testament at the Associated Mennonite Biblical Seminary. Steve received his Master of Arts in Theology from the University of St. Thomas, and then did his PhD in theology work with the University of Notre Dame. His dissertation for his doctoral degree was focused on Chronicles and has since been published as Reading Utopia in Chronicles. So, Steve, you're one of the leading experts on Chronicles in our tradition now, and we're thrilled to have you as part of this in leading us in the study of the Chronicler. Welcome.
Thank you, Anton. It's a real pleasure to be here, and special thanks to the Brethren Academy for Ministerial Leadership, who has helped to put this podcast series together in conjunction with the Chronicler Bible Study that has been published by Brethren Press. It's really exciting for me as someone who's very passionate about the Book of Chronicles to see good resources out there available to a variety of people so it can be made accessible. And hopefully this series of podcasts will enhance the study that's going on. So just grateful that we see lots of cooperation and collaboration between different parts of the denomination in making this material more hopefully available and hopefully exciting as people dig into the Book of Chronicles.
I've been finding this series very exciting, Steve, so we're looking forward to you kicking us off.
Thanks. So as Enton said, my major dissertation work was on the Book of Chronicles, and I've spent a long time studying this material and think that it's incredibly provocative text and something exceedingly relevant for our day and age. Chronicles was written in a time of great cultural upheaval, which I'll talk about a little bit more in a moment, and has lots of theological implications for our present. So I hope that everyone who is going through this material can find the links between what is being said in this very inspired text and what it means for the church today. So I hope to tease some of that out in the podcast that I'm doing, and hopefully Bob and Frank are doing the same as well in their materials. So it's just a real honor to be working on this and to think about how this book that's been often neglected or ignored has a lot to say to the church today if we take the time to stop and ponder what it is it's saying to us. So one of my major goals in this particular podcast is to talk about the background of the book, to think about its context, historical situation, why it was written, some of the major themes that are involved in the text, just give an overview to the book so that anyone entering into the study of Chronicles has an easy access point for the situation of the author and audience who are first hearing the text. So some background of the book. First off, the Book of Chronicles is in the Old Testament, not to be confused with the Book of Corinthians, which surprisingly enough is often done. This is in Protestant Bibles found up in front with the other historical books right after Kings traditionally. In Jewish Bibles, Chronicles concludes the canon. It's the final book in the set. And so the Book of Chronicles ends the Hebrew Bible. And so for Jews, this is how they close out their scriptures. Protestant and Catholic Bibles, of course, close with Malachi, which is a very different way of ending with a prophetic text than with Chronicles. And we'll talk maybe a little bit more about that in one of the other podcasts about why that is the way it is. But its placement in the canon is particularly interesting in that in the Jewish canon, it comes at the end and really points to a different future and calls the people to something new. And I think that that element of the book has gone unnoticed by many commentators and interpreters in the past because of its placement in our canon, where it's sort of smack in the middle of a whole bunch of other historical stuff, and so it's read historically instead of as a text filled with hope. Hope for a future. And so I want to play with that a little bit in the conversation in this first podcast.
That really changes how you would understand the message of this particular book in the whole canon.
That's right. And this takes seriously the placement of the book within the canon. That being aware of what comes before and after the book in sequence, not just of one chapter to the next, but one book to the next, is particularly important for gaining an overall understanding of the book's message. So for Jews, this book chronicles, the last words are a call from King Cyrus that anyone who is of the people of God, of Israel, who should want to go back to the land to return and build the temple, let that person go up. So it's an open invitation to return, to rebuild, to create something new, to re-identify with this people in a new way. That's a lot different than the way that Malachi ends. Malachi, of course, ends with the promise of Elijah's return, the day of the Lord's appearance, and then, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. And so you have this warning of punishment at the end of Malachi, which then, of course, yields to the promise and hope in Matthew. In the Old Testament, in the Hebrew Bible, with Chronicles at the end, it's this open-ended call of hope and restoration that really provides a way of inspiring the Jews to think about what their future can look like. And in a situation, say, after the temple has been destroyed by the Romans in 70, this is particularly important. How are they going to move forward? And Chronicles, I think, provides a message to them, just like it provided a message to its own audience when the book was first written.
And Chronicles, actually, the entire book is written by the chronicler towards that end of how do we move forward, how do we live, what is our hope? Is that not right?
That would be my contention, that it is a book filled with hope for the future. Often this book has been read as a recitation of the past. And most people, when they are reading their Bibles, read Kings, and then they get to Chronicles, which comes next, and then they go, I just read this, and then they move on, and they don't really pay attention to Chronicles because it is a little repetitive, but it's not the same text, and it highlights different things, and it tells the story from a different perspective. And in the midst of telling the story from a different perspective, it points out different ways in which the community can affirm going forward in a new direction. And the reason that that's so important is the context in which the Book of Chronicles was written. So we use the chronicler as the shorthand version of the author of Chronicles. No one really knows who wrote it. Jewish tradition says Ezra was responsible for it. Christian tradition sometimes affirms that, sometimes not, but the author is truly anonymous. No one knows who actually wrote the book. And so scholars have gone to the shorthand version, the chronicler, the author of Chronicles, who almost certainly was male. I mean, so if I, throughout this podcast series, will say he for the author, it's pretty clear that this is a male writing the text for a variety of reasons. But the historical context in which the book was written, if the Book of Kings was written in the exile, the Babylonian exile, in the 6th century, Chronicles is written a good 150 to 200 years after that, probably sometime almost certainly in the 4th century BCE. Whether it's the early part of the 4th century under Persian rule or the later part of the 4th century when Alexander the Great has conquered the Mediterranean basin and brings Greek culture is a little less clear. There's nothing in the Book of Chronicles that requires it to be written in the Hellenistic or Greek period. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that clearly indicates that.
But either way, it's about 2,500 years ago, roughly.
That's correct. About 2,500 years ago. And there are clearly Persian elements in the text. So, for example, the book concludes with the Edict of Cyrus, the Persian king who lived at 539 BCE. So the text has to be written after Cyrus, during the Persian period, or just into the Hellenistic period. So it matters less whether it's during sort of the late Persian period or the early Hellenistic period. What's important is to recognize that this whole century is a time of great cultural, economic, political, radical upheaval. Mm-hmm. You have the direct conflict of cultures between sort of the ancient Near Eastern culture, represented by the Persians, the Israelites, the Egyptians, the Babylonians, coming up against the Hellenistic Greek culture that throughout the 4th century, even before Alexander's conquest, those cultures are interacting, and there's a time of great strife and turmoil. And throughout this period, you see lots of different reactions to how to deal with this new way of thinking.
Sounds kind of like globalization today.
It does. And there are many striking parallels between what's going on in the 4th century when the Chronicles was written and what's going on today when you have the rug pulled out from under your feet in terms of socioeconomic situations and you're looking for something that's stable to cling on to. And some people are calling for open revolt. And other people are saying, let's just wait this out. And other people say, well, we need to return back to the glory days of how it used to be. And other people are saying, no, we need a radical break from that and going in a whole new direction. And I think the Chronicler lived in a time where all of that was present. You have apocalyptic visions calling for people to throw off the Persians or the Greeks or whatever the case may be. So you have this radical social upheaval in the midst of this, and Chronicles speaks into that and says, we do not need to follow these paths of open revolt. We do not need to be stuck in our past, stuck in the Babylonian exile mentality. The exile is over. It's done with. Yes, it was a traumatic experience, but all of you who are alive now, you didn't experience it, and it's time to move on. And so the Chronicler writes a history that significantly downplays the exile and shows the people what they currently have, the temple, that is a place for them to rally around and to support and to move forward, and that worshiping God and getting in touch with who they truly are as a people is much more important than what the political system or what the larger cultural matrix is. So the Chronicler is trying to move the people out of a feeling of that they're trapped and they can do nothing about their situation to, well, what can we do? What are the possibilities? What can we control? And one thing they can control is their worship of God, and their worship of God particularly at the temple. So in some ways, I see Chronicles as a direct response to the history of Kings, that Kings is saying, if you want to know how we got into this mess, here's how we got here. This is where the wheels came off. This is how it all fell apart. This is what you don't want to do. It's a via negativa, a negative history. Here in Chronicles, we say, yes, we recognize there were some failures, but also some good stuff happened too. And if we hearken back to the good things and we think about what those good things mean for today, not trying to replicate them, but trying to imitate the spirit of them, then we have a chance. We have a chance to reconstitute a new society, to live into a new reality, and that really there are no limits to what God can do in that new reality. And so Chronicles has often in the past, particularly by scholars, been labeled as a blueprint designed to reinforce the status quo. This is the normal way the text is read. And so what I'm proposing in my work is a pretty radical view of Chronicles, that it is not a blueprint. It is not laying down once and for all time the way that it should be, but that in presenting multiple ways of looking at the same thing, and in subsequent podcasts we'll talk about that understanding, if there's multiple ways of looking at how to live, then that creates possibilities. It creates options. And that all of them fall within the range of being faithful and true and valid and provide new ways forward given new historical situations. So Kings tells this negative history of what went wrong. Chronicles tells a positive history of what went right and therefore how we have hope to do something good in the future. Again, Kings says, if you want to go into exile again, here's what you do. Chronicles says, if you want to live into the future and stay in this land and be productive and have a functioning society, here's what you do. Those two very different visions of the past that then affect the future. So those are some sort of opening remarks. For me, that element of hope, I call that utopia. And it's not a utopia in sort of a flat, static, once and for all way of looking at things, but in comparison with other utopian literature, both in the ancient world and in the more modern world, what we see in utopia, in utopian literature, what we see there is a dynamic interplay between history and possibility, that the utopian vision pushes forward in new ways what could be and creates multiple places for new possibilities. So the chronicler knows very clearly this whole tradition that stands behind him. The Pentateuch, the five books of Moses, Samuel and Kings, Joshua, Psalms, Isaiah, most of the minor prophets. Essentially, at the time the chronicler is writing, almost all the Old Testament has been written. And the chronicler knows this tradition really, really well. And as you pay attention to the details in Chronicles, of which there are many, you can go back and look in the Law and Psalms and in Kings and compare and contrast what the chronicler is doing over against what these other texts say, and to see where the chronicler is supporting that, nuancing it, pushing it in a new direction, tweaking it here and there, and being incredibly sophisticated. We're talking about an incredibly brilliant author in the way that this individual used the past in creative ways, not being anchored and solidified in one particular view, but really blowing open the possibilities while remaining faithful to the past. So obviously this is very exciting to me. Often as we think about Chronicles, I think we think it's pretty boring, that it's pretty dry, it's a bunch of lists. And certainly those first nine chapters of genealogies don't help you any for most modern readers. So there's something about slowing down and appreciating that. But then as you get into the narrative of seeing the macro themes that are running through. So I thought in this first podcast, as we're sort of coming to a conclusion here, I would sort of list off some of the themes that are important in Chronicles just at this point, and then we'll see how they play out. One of the key themes, probably the dominant theme in Chronicles, is the point of seeking God. This is a phrase that, of course, is found throughout the Old Testament, but it's in a particularly high concentration in Chronicles. Chronicles is really concerned that the people have their heart set to seek God, and the condition of the heart trumps everything else. If the people's hearts are in the right place, then that is the greatest value, and we'll see a couple examples of that throughout the podcast series. The seeking God can be done either at the temple or in private worship. So there's no sort of control over people's piety. Often the chronicler is cast by scholars as a rigid legalist, and nothing could be further from the truth. The chronicler is not as concerned about the forms as about the condition of the heart. And several other scholars in the past decade have recognized this, and I'm sort of building upon those insights. Clearly, the temple is the primary location in the book. Worship of God as being the central good. In the book, and everything in one shape or form relates back to that, that it's this call to authentic worship, this call to seeking God, of constantly extending to the people an invitation to worship that we see in the book. We often think of this with the book of Psalms. Chronicles is a book about worship, and we should really pay attention to that as we look at it. Another dominant theme in the book that sort of goes with that is the expansive notion of leadership. Often in Kings, in the book of Kings, kings make a decision all on their own. The king decides something and acts and does it. Chronicles, rarely does the king do it alone. The king constantly is getting advice or acting in conjunction with the people. Scholars have identified this as the democratization of leadership in Chronicles, that there's an expansive notion of who's involved in the decision-making process, whether it's all the men and the women and the children, or the king and the elders and the assembly in Jerusalem. That there's this notion in which the king does not act unilaterally,
but
acts
like
collaboratively.
That sounds like a kind of modern idea, though.
It does. It really does.
And this was from at least 2,500 years
again,
ago?
Again, 4th century BCE, 2,500 years ago, and this stands in remarkable contrast to what you see in the Book of Kings. So there's this sense in which the chronicler recognizes that true leadership is one of collaboration and one in which you try to get as many voices in the mix as possible. And that sounds a little Anabaptist as well. And, you know, I can be accused of reading it in there, except the text says it. And it's just, I'm not making it up. It's there. Another point that the chronicler continues to come back to is this issue of inclusivity versus exclusivity. Who's in and who's out? And some texts in the Old Testament are very exclusive. We could put Ezra and Nehemiah right at the forefront of those. Other texts are much more inclusive, like the book of Ruth, Jonah, Isaiah 56 in particular. Chronicles fits much more on the Ruth, Jonah, Isaiah 56 side of inclusivity, and much, much less on the side of Ezra and Nehemiah in terms of being exclusive. Constantly, the chronicler is including foreigners in the worship, reaching out to the northern kingdom that's been ostracized. There's this deep recognition that Israel is incomplete, and that is constantly pulling in other people as part of the people of God. And certainly it foreshadows in many ways the decision in Acts 15 where the Council of Jerusalem decides not to circumcise all these Gentiles. They don't need it. And the chronicler would fit that mold. The chronicler would agree with that on many levels. And so in this ongoing debate about who's in and who's out, the chronicler would weigh in solidly on being pretty inclusive and creating space in the text and in the worship for people who in other parts of the Old Testament tradition would be excluded. So the chronicler finds creative ways of incorporating these people.
That also seems like a modern theme. I mean, the church is wrestling with some of those issues now.
That's right. In a variety of ways, the church is struggling with the issues of inclusivity and exclusivity. And certainly the Bible has a lot to say about identity and what it means to be the people of God. And in Chronicles, we find a very open call for all who will, let them come. And we see this in a variety of places through the text, whether it's the genealogies or the narratives. Those who want to worship God are those who are Israel. It is not about biological descent. There are Israelites who are born Israelites who are excluded because of their unfaithfulness. There are foreigners who are included because of their faithfulness. Hmm. And there's this call for all to come to worship. The last theme that's often talked about in terms of a dominant theme in Chronicles is the idea of immediate retribution. So that God punishes the sins of the individual or the generation on that individual or generation and rewards those in the same way, that the cumulative effect of a sin from one generation to the next does not really work. So, for example, in the book of Kings, the whole exile and destruction and everything is essentially blamed on Manasseh. Manasseh, at least three times in the text, gets blamed for the final result. Manasseh lives a good full 100, 150 years before the destruction of Jerusalem, but he's the blame for the whole thing. In Chronicles, the chronicler wants to be very clear that each generation has its own choice. The generation is not bound to the past. So this new generation that needs to get past the exile, that needs to think creatively about its future, does not have to say, well, we are still suffering because of the sins of the past. We are accountable for ourselves. And so this is part of the chronicler's point, that each generation is accountable to itself and that it needs to move in that direction. So when something goes right, it's rewarded immediately. When something goes wrong, it's punished immediately. And we might still argue and debate over the whole system of reward and punishment, but this is an advance in Chronicles over the system that you see in Kings, where the book of Kings sort of perpetuates this generational curse, or the sins of the ancestors keep following down through the generations and the people can't quite break the cycle. Chronicles says you can choose to do something else. You can repent. You can be restored. And you do not need to be bound by what has happened before you. And that's quite significant in the history of theology. And Chronicles repeatedly articulates this. So there's a lot of theological development in this book. There's a lot of key theological concepts that point us forward to the New Testament, where we see great continuity between themes in Chronicles and themes in the New Testament. And I think, personally, not that I'm biased, that the Book of Chronicles clearly puts us on a trajectory towards Jesus and towards the New Testament, that many of the things we find in here are very consistent with what we see going on in the Gospels, and particularly in the words and sayings of Jesus. So I find great hope in talking holistically about the Bible when we look at a book like Chronicles that has deep and rich theological meaning by itself, and also when we look in terms of the larger biblical canon.
Well, Steve, we'll look forward to how we develop these themes in the next 9 podcasts. So,
yeah, excellent.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, and thank you.
Church of the Brethren webcasts are made possible through the collaborative efforts of all of the Church of the Brethren agencies and are produced by Bethany Theological Seminary. For more information about these webcasts, please visit us on the web at www.cobwebcast.bethanyseminary.edu. Thank you for joining us for the Church of the Brethren webcast series.